Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q3 FY22 earnings conference call of Indiabulls Housing Finance Limited, hosted by Investec Capital Services. From the management, we have with us Mr. Gagan Banga, Vice Chairman, MD and CEO, Mr. Ashwini Hooda, Deputy Managing Director, Mr. Mukesh Garg, Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Sachin Chaudhary, Chief Operating Officer, Mr. Ashwin Mallick, Head Treasury, Mr. Ramnath Shenoy, Head IR and Analytics, Mr. Vikesh Gandhi, Head Markets, Mr. Hemal Zaveri, Head Banking. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Gagan Banga from Indiabulls Housing Finance Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you. A very good day to all of you, and welcome to the earnings call of quarter three of fiscal 2021-22. I hope all of you and your families are doing well and are safe. At the beginning of the new year, I was reflecting on the year gone by, the wins, the misses, accomplishments, and the progress Indiabulls Housing made in 2021. As we started 2021, I was cautiously optimistic, and despite the adversities, believed that all will be well. Now that we are in 2022, I'm actually pleasantly surprised with the progress Indiabulls Housing made in 2021. Some of the key accomplishments of 2021 include transformation from a design stage to now a maturing asset-light, retail-focused business model, operationalization of the AIF platform for wholesale loans within the current quarter, the continuing institutionalization of the company, and continuing to maintain a fortress balance sheet despite all the adversities around COVID and everything else that fiscal 2021 stood for. I would request you now to please refer to slides four to eight of the earnings update. The company has spent the last 3 years in realigning its business model to the changed realities for NBFCs in India. We came to a realization that a successful housing finance business will have to go through a cyclical shift wherein asset-heavy balance sheets and high leverage levels will have to transform into leaner balance sheets by following an asset-light model of business. As we made this entire design, there were more skeptics. There were also several critics. We kept our focus over the last 3 years very tight towards consolidation of our balance sheet and, as a result, strategic de-risking of our balance sheet. Since September 2018, on a gross basis, Indiabulls has successfully repaid roughly rupees 88,000 crores of monies to the system. As we did this, we have successfully de-levered from a net gearing of over 7x in FY 2018 to below 3x now. With the real estate sector showing strong upward trajectory, we are firmly on track to reduce our wholesale book by a third by the end of this financial year vis-à-vis fiscal 2021, and by 50% by the end of calendar 2022. Hereon, this will be achieved through internal accruals, that is, sales and collections at the various projects, and we will not need to resort to any of the expensive structured deals that we have done in the past. In fact, I'm very happy to inform that the structured deals that we had concluded 1 year ago, which should have had a very nominal runoff in 1 year, have seen a rundown of as much as 45%, with the buoyancy being witnessed in the real estate market. This is a very good reflection of the quality of our wholesale assets and also the liquidity of these assets. During this phase, we have shifted our focus to transforming Indiabulls Housing to an origination and servicing machine, by building a technology-enabled, cost-efficient asset-light business model, which operates on low leverage yet provides a strong base for mid- to high-teen ROE. I am happy to inform that within months of starting and transforming this business and taking it to some scale, we are already back to being the third-largest mortgage originators within housing finance companies in India. Under this model, our net gearing will stabilize around 2.5 times as the new book starts adding in and will remain stable at these levels as incremental business will be done in an asset-light model. We also, over the course of the last 3 years, enhanced the process of institutionalization of the company. Now, as we execute a strategy of Indiabulls 3.0, we have a three-track roadmap ahead of us for fiscal 23 and beyond. The first track is to continue to mature our retail-focused, tech-enabled, low-cost distribution model through co-lending and securitization in partnership with banks and other financial institutions. We have been very careful in selecting our partners and have only gone with such partners where there is a strategic fit and we bring something which is extremely valuable for our partners. We will revert back to pursuing growth, but in an asset-light model, and we expect a 15% AUM growth in fiscal 23. Our focus through our asset-light model is to regain our position as a large originator of loans and drive total loan assets under management rather than balance sheet growth. As I mentioned, we are already back to being the third-largest originator amongst HFCs, and we can continue to grow this scale. There's a large opportunity in the mortgage industry, and the macro for housing has changed after 8 to 9 years. Over the past 1 year, we've been working hard to establish and operationalize our co-lending relationships with partner banks and financial institutions. In line with the revised guidelines around transfer of assets as well as co-lending, I am happy to inform that in quarter three, we did business with each of our seven lending partners and did as much as 1,573 crores of retail co-lending at an impressive return on asset of 3%. For fiscal 23, we already have a contracted demand for rupees 20,000 crores of co-lending assets from our partners. This establishes without doubt the scalability of the co-lending model. We achieved total retail disbursements of roughly 2,800 crores in quarter three fiscal 22 on a run rate of a little over 900 crores per month. We are scaling up our branches and salespeople, and we are on track to disburse retail loans of roughly 18,000 crores in fiscal 23, which should further scale up to 24,000 crores in fiscal 24. These disbursals will be done in a ratio of 70-30 between home loans and LAP. Of the total loans disbursed, only about 15% of the loans on a longer-term basis will stay on our balance sheet, fulfilling our asset-light growth objectives. We continue to focus on our physical distribution, which is riding on evolving India, with its backbone on simple yet scalable tech-enabled.
The person you are speaking with.
For our employees and customers to go deep into Bharat. Over the past 4 quarters, we have continued to expand our reach by increasing our branch network in tier 3 and 4 towns through opening 29 technology-enabled smart branches. We are now in a position and are tracking to add 50 such technology-enabled smart branches by the end of fiscal 22. We've also successfully over the last 2 years completed a test phase for two new products, Smart City Home Loans and Smart City LAP Loans, which cater to the home loan and LAP requirements in smart cities and tier 2, 3 and 4 towns of the country. These are smaller ticket loans. For example, home loans will be in the ballpark of 10 lakh of rupees. Indiabulls houses and would be operating at a yield of 12 to 13%. Indiabulls Housing will launch these products at a full scale in fiscal 23, and we aim to disburse 2,000 crores in the next financial year around the smart city products. Having operationalized our retail co-lending model, the second track for us is to now focus on operationalizing our wholesale co-lending through an AIF platform in partnership with three global real estate-focused funds, one of which is also a global institutional stakeholder who bought a part of our promoter stake. The AIF platform will be filed with the SEBI in quarter 4 fiscal 22 and will be launched in quarter 1 fiscal 23, subject to receipt of necessary regulatory approvals. The platform will focus on lending to commercial real estate to tap the LRD opportunity, construction finance for residential and commercial projects, investing in the stressed asset opportunity, and providing mezzanine finance wherever the opportunity presents itself. Year one goal is to do 15,000 crores, year two 20,000 crores. Of this, 10% of the capital will be provided by Indiabulls Housing and the balance will come from our partner bank. This platform on our capital invested will generate an ROA of over 5% for the company. We have undoubtedly been in the repair and transition mode over the last 3 years, which may have perhaps especially to our skeptics, given the impression that we do not know what we are doing. Over the course of the last 3 years, we've been focusing on ensuring that we continue to maintain a robust and fortress balance sheet and at the same point in time create a base not only around capital provisioning, etc., but around a business model which does not remain vulnerable to interest rate and liquidity cycles and does not wobble every 5 years, which has been the case with NBFCs in general in India. We've turned the corner, and from fiscal 23, we will be in the transition and growth mode. In fiscal 23, we will be focused on resuming profit compounding, which we did extremely well for 10 years between 2009 and 19, and we believe we can get back to a decade of 15%+ annualized profit compounding, maintaining an ROA of 3%+ across all of our products. This 3% ROA is not something which is based on an Excel sheet model. This is something that we are actually achieving on a flow basis through our retail disbursals today. The retail disbursals are for real. The disbursals around co-lending is for real. The contracted demand is for real. And this gives me confidence that the growth plan of 15% for fiscal 23 should also in reality work out. Just to make sure that all our stakeholders are aligned with the way that our board and the management team are working, we will measure our success by our retail disbursal growth, our ability to generate an ROA of 3%+, and the value of our franchise by adding around 250,000 customers over the next 2 to 3 years. And in the process, build a highly sustainable, customer service-focused, low-cost platform. While we pursue both the tracks, we will continue with the exercise of de-risking the balance sheet through a reduction of the legacy wholesale book. The wholesale platforms that we are setting up in the AI structure will facilitate that process. The macro momentum on the real estate side would also further facilitate that process. And we should be able to complete a 33% reduction by the end of this fiscal over where we were last year. The third track is to continue with the institutionalization of the company, to transform it into a board-led, professionally managed company with best-in-class corporate governance. The institutionalization process began around 3 years ago when the wider Indiabulls group decided to move out of the real estate development business. It's as a step to move forward with the founder relinquishing the chairmanship of the board, which is now assumed by Mr. Mundra, the former deputy governor. As a step three, the board was strengthened through the induction of new independent directors from various walks of life who are all extremely distinguished and experienced. As the next step, all of our various board subcommittees were chaired by independent directors and are dominated by independent directors. So be it the audit, the risk management, the ESG, they're all chaired by independent directors with relevant experience. As a further step, Mr. Gehlot also reduced his stake in December 21, which was bought by a group of marquee global institutions such as Blackstone, RDI, etc. As a next step, such significant institutional investors will be offered board seats, thus bringing direct institutional oversight into the operations of the company. Subject to receipt of requisite approvals, we will conclude the process of depromoterization of Mr. Gehlot in calendar 22. And through calendar 22, we will continue to engage with strategic investors to bolster capital and enhance credit ratings. Indiabulls Housing has a bias for action, and we all know that preferential transactions, etc., have had their own regulatory issues, especially for companies trading below book value. So rather than stay in the realm of theory, we decided to move ahead and make a very, very concrete and perhaps the most important step towards the institutionalization of the company. We are in a very clear and comfortable position as far as capital is concerned, yet we remain engaged with strategic investors, and I am highly confident that with the new ownership structure, we are in a very, very good position to be able to figure out a new structure which should bolster the capital and as a result enhance our credit ratings within calendar 22. Our partnerships with various global funds will only help us in facilitating this process. In order to get third-party validation, we are also voluntarily applying to be part of NSE Prime, which sets the norms that prescribes corporate governance standards stricter than the extant requirements for NSE-listed companies. The same has been approved by the Board of Directors in today's meeting. Our ESG committee is now engaging with both S&P and Sustainalytics. Our board has also approved that through the course of calendar 22, we will be issuing 5,000 crores of sustainable bonds, which will have second-party confirmation from Sustainalytics and one of the Big Fours. The existing management team will continue to run the company. It has been beefed up with new talent around IT and IT security, besides compliance, and together we will continue to drive the new asset-light business model. The three tracks will govern the way we operate from fiscal 23 and beyond, and I'm quite sure that we will continue to build on our position as the third largest originator to become one of the largest originators in the mortgage industry in general. Now, to just go over the headline numbers for the quarter before we conclude, if you can refer to slide three. As at the end of December 21, our loan book stands at just under 61,000 crores. Our assets under management stand at just under 74,000 crores. Our AUM has been on a decline as we've looked to consolidate our wholesale and high-ticket assets in order to de-risk the balance sheet. And to that end, quarter three was a phenomenal success. This initiative gained traction on account of favorable macros and resultant cash flows from projects of our borrowers, which has helped us in reduction of these assets through self-liquidation rather than having to resort to any meaningful structured transaction, especially in the last 2 months. We are firmly on track, as I've mentioned, to continue to reduce the wholesale book. But in the same breath, I would say that we are now at the fag end of our AUM consolidation process. And from fiscal 23, quarter one itself, we should start growing at an annualized rate of around 15%. Our capital adequacy provides us at 31.2% with tier 1 capital of 25.7%, provides us with a great base to achieve this growth. The net debt to equity of 2.8 times makes us fundamentally very, very strong. And the profit after tax stability that we have achieved over the last 4 quarters has made a very good base for earnings to also start compounding from fiscal 23 onwards. If we can move on to slide 9 now, please. The company has aligned its definition of default from EMI outstanding to days past due approach as per the RBI's guidelines. This has had a marginal impact on the financial results of the company. The increase, as I mentioned at the start, is technical in nature and will get rolled back over the next 2 to 3 quarters. Our total provisions continue to be extremely comfortable at 4.5% of loan book, which is over 3 times of the regulatory requirements and almost 120% of our gross NPAs. Besides low gearing and high capital, high provision cushions places the portfolio in a strong position to negotiate any macroeconomic uncertainty and at the same time provides a strong base for growth from fiscal 23 onwards. The company has seen strong recoveries in the last 2 quarters, and on the back of the pickup in the real estate sector, the company expects this trend to continue through quarter 4 fiscal 22. Overall, our portfolio performance has been fairly stable. We've not had to do much of restructuring, and only 0.25% of our loan book is under the restructuring framework of 1.20 and 2.0. Under the ECLGS scheme, we have disbursed loans of only 204 crores till the end of December 21, which is equivalent to only 0.33% of our loan book. We believe our strong provisioning pool, the seasoned retail portfolio, and our strong demonstrated recovery capabilities will ensure that the asset quality will be maintained in a fairly tight range from where it is right now. Moving on to the next important pillar of our operations, especially given our focus on maintaining a fortress balance sheet, is liquidity and ALM management. On slide 11, we have given the details of the monies we have raised in the 9 months of fiscal 22. We've raised a total of 18,500 crores through various institutions. These include over 4,000 crores of long-term loans, 7,500 crores of loans between 1 and 3 years. Most importantly, through the course of this fiscal year, we have started restarted the process of retailization of our liability franchise. We have successfully done public issues totaling to 1,345 crores thus far this year, and we will look to do at least one more issue in the current financial year. This should be a steady source of public sort of funds of around 2,000 crores every year. Through securitization and loan sell downs, we have raised around 4,600 crores. We've also raised equity and quasi-equity through FCCB transactions and our stake sale in Oak North Bank, which earned us an IRR of over 48% in 6 years. Our funding program is coming back on track. The public sector banking piece had already come back on track. I'm happy to inform that 3 private banks also joined the consortium last quarter. and on the back of the various capital raise initiatives, equity, quasi-equity and debt, the rating agencies were kind to change the outlook of the company to stable, which has resulted in our lead bank reducing our rates by 100 basis points. Given our proportion of bank term loans and working capital facilities, we expect other banks to follow suit, and over the next 90 to 120 days, this should result in our overall cost of funds dropping by 50 basis points. This is a great hedge to have in an otherwise perhaps an unfavorable rate cycle. Along with the ESG ratings from Sustainalytics, the company has also developed a sustainable financing framework. And as I had mentioned earlier, through this year in calendar 23, we look to issue around 5,000 crores of sustainable bonds in domestic and perhaps guidelines permitting even in the international markets. As at the end of September, IBH had a liquidity buffer of almost 9,000 crores or roughly 15% of our loan book. We've also voluntarily created a reserve fund for the dollar bond maturing in May 22. We've already transferred 2,048 crores, totaling to 75% of the total maturity proceeds. And we are extremely comfortable as far as this particular repayment is concerned. The company has in the past done bond buybacks. In this particular case, it has created a dollar reserve fund. And we will continue to undertake such proactive management of ALM to utilize a strong capital position, comfortable level of liquidity, and to provide comfort and confidence to our bondholders and the wider capital markets to further strengthen our credentials. As per RBI's master directions for housing finance companies, we were supposed to start maintaining a 50% liquidity coverage ratio based on tightly defined high-quality liquid assets against the 50% required by the regulation. We stand at 393%. Mind you, these are just high-quality liquid assets. The actual quality liquidity available to us is 9,000 crores, and even stuff which is invested in overnight funds, etc., is excluded out of high-quality liquid assets. Our ALM as at the end of December 21 is published on slide 10. Our detailed 10-year quarterly ALM is also in the appendix slides, and we have a positive net cash of 10,464 crores at the end of first year. Moving on to slides 12 and 13, during the last quarter, we had laid down objectives, targets for the company over the next 10 years for our ESG best practices. We have engaged with Center for Environmental Research and Education to assess our current environmental footprint. We've also partnered with ESG rating firm Sustainalytics to develop a sustainable financing framework. And this is the way forward for that and a huge area of focus for the company, for which our ESG subcommittee is regularly monitoring us and on a quarterly basis updating the board. To conclude, I would like to re-emphasize that the management team has embraced the following operating metrics to be the key parts through which we will measure our success, and hopefully the market would also value and measure the success of our franchise. We believe our enterprise value on a longer term basis will be driven by the quantum of retail disbursals that we do, the ROA that we generate out of that, and the expansion of customer franchise. I have detailed numbers and targets around each of these three. The other important thing in order to make sure that we sustain our 3% plus ROA target very comfortably is to buffer it with a 5% product, 5% ROA product, which comes in via an AIF platform. We are fairly confident that this platform will be operational within a quarter. institutionalization of the company and the transformation, that journey that we had begun 3 years ago, is continuous. And through calendar 22, be it the depromoterization process or the bolstering of capital through a strategic transaction, would continue to remain areas of emphasis for the senior management. And we will continue our focus on maintaining a fortress balance sheet that can't be compromised or laid less emphasis on at any point in time. And for that, we would continue to rely on the pillars of strong capital adequacy, high provision, and high liquidity. This brings us to the end of this presentation. The IBH management team is now open for questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Reminder to the participants, anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one. The first question is from the line of Craig Elliott from NWI Management. Please go ahead.
Good evening. Congratulations. Thank you for your time, sirs, on the great results and great progress over the last quarter and the past few years. I really like the crystallization of the solid, three-track roadmap. As you know, we at NWI are long-term supporters, and we count ourselves among your biggest fans. One of the things we wanted to bring up for a brief discussion, credit agencies, thanks to your efforts, have finally, I think, started to understand the value and the great progress that you've made across a number of areas. Just wanted to bring up a few areas and get your thoughts on how to help other things that you've been doing be understood by the broader financial markets, especially the stock markets. The three-track roadmap is one, which is very powerful. We understand it as your long-term investors. Number two, the depromoterization, we've always taken as a positive, but perhaps the market is balancing that against having a more diversified shareholder base as maybe not as positive. Number three, the asset-light model, understood well, I think, again, by us, but does the market, especially the local market, need some education there? I'm sorry for all the points. And number four is that it seems generally that sell-side research is not following you as closely, especially on the equities research side, as we think you deserve. So those are some diverse comments and questions. I'll turn over to you for your quick thoughts on those four things, please.
So firstly, thank you for your continuing support, the guidance that you provide to the management team, your encouraging comments. We strongly believe that what we are doing in terms of institutionalization or the asset light model is the right way for the company to go forward. That said, since we operate in a regulated environment, there is only so much that we can communicate, especially in a silent period. So I believe that soon after the stake sale, we quickly came into a period where December 31st happened and we could not really engage with stakeholders and explain the way forward. And there was confusion as to whether there is going to be a strategic investor or not, what would the top management look like, what would be the role of some of the investors who've come in. I would like to just give a small, use this opportunity to give a small example from how relationships grow. From my own personal experience dealing with one of the largest private equity funds, which acquired a material portion of the assets of our associate company, India Bulls Real Estate. That engagement began back in 2017-18, and they acquired a partial stake of a few commercial assets. 6 months later, they acquired a partial stake of some more assets. Subsequently, they acquired all the commercial assets. And eventually, as is common knowledge, they came in and were sort of the catalyst for the eventual merger which is undergoing between Indiabulls Real Estate and Embassy, in which they would also be material shareholders. As I had mentioned in my comments, at Indiabulls, we have a bias for action. We can continue to wait for the ideal scenario to emerge or the ideal product, stroke, solution or regulation to emerge, which solves all of our problems at one go. What our experience tells us, especially learning from the challenges some of our peers have also faced, there is no doubt that the NBFC industry has been in a hard place for the last 3 to 4 years. A few of us have tried to transform ourselves and have done so successfully. And I give compliments to each of my peers who have been able to transform their businesses successfully. Some others use this as an opportunity and were in a privileged position given their background and have actually meaningfully grown. The sector in general has presented to all stakeholders a very clear case that even though it was back in the day loosely regulated or it had what was called a light touch regulation, on a broader basis, aside of one or two bad apples, it has been a good sector. It hasn't given pain to any stakeholder. In our specific case, we have been able to repay to the financial system something close to about $12 to $13 billion, which is a phenomenal sum of money by any standards. All of this has set us up in a ownership structure today where any partner is engaging directly with the board. The free float of the company is such that if anyone is seeking control, it is available without much of resistance coming from anyone. The business model is maturing from a stage where it was in design phase and there were skeptics to today where a lot of my peers and other stakeholders are reaching out to us to understand what is the technology deployment that we are doing and how are we managing to do this scale with a multiple number of banks. So all in all, I think as the franchise value improves, as the enterprise value improves, the probability of the company finding the right sort of direction and the right sort of home also improves. Some participants in the market would look to start engaging with the company on a more continuing basis once they see a clear track record of growth. As you rightly said, while the asset-light model is a well-recognized and established model for mortgage financing in the Western world, it is not so in the US. I was with a large, very well-known fund manager managing billions of dollars of assets, but focused on India. And he did not understand the rocket mortgage model very well, and which I believe is now the largest mortgage originator in the US, doing larger mortgage origination than most of the large banks like Wells Fargo, etc. That's the goal. That's where we have to go. That's the opportunity. Fortunately for us, we have all the financial buffers in place, so we do not have to worry about a transaction necessarily happening for us to be able to grow because we do not have the equity capital. The debt providers are hugely supportive. The company understood on a longer term basis for stability, it needs to adopt the best governance practices, and it is trying to move ahead on very, very sound and robust governance practices to the best of our understanding, and we are forever open to any sort of a suggestion, which is why we are also getting some of our institutional shareholders on the board of directors such that shareholders such as yourself feel that your peers are there to protect your interest. As we move forward on all of this, there would be a time where at a much larger enterprise value, we will do some sort of a strategic transaction. Till that time, the senior management team, the top 30 people who have stuck together over the course of the last 3 tough years, we've just beefed up that team further with a few additional very valuable resources in the departments that we needed. And we are fairly confident that we should be able to do the disbursals of 18,000 crores and generate an ROA of 3% plus fiscal 23 onwards. So we thank you for your patience, NWI in specific and other supporters in general. And I am very, very confident that with all of these buffers in place and with the team together managed by a very, very professional and experienced board, we should be able to operate and deliver on the operating metrics that I have mentioned. Will we be a classic mortgage lender which is growing its balance sheet? I want to make it abundantly clear, for me, a fortress balance sheet is what is a must. I do not believe on a longer term basis 7x gearing is appropriate. We will continue to run the company at 2.5 to 3x gearing. But in the same breath, I can also assure you that we are very focused on ROE. We have a 16-year track record of giving dividends every year to our shareholders since we got listed. ROE dividend payouts are extremely dear to us. We will, through this model, achieve a mid-teen ROE in the next 2 years. And I'm quite hopeful as we deliver this quarter on quarter, as the credit rating agencies have understood this model in detail, as we become more predictable in our earnings, the equity analysts would also start engaging more productively. We've gone through this cycle earlier. It takes a little bit of a time, but I'm quite confident that by September 2022, we will have at least 3 to 4 of the global banks or brokerages of the global banks writing on us. We are always available to them. It's a matter of record. Some of them would be here, and we will continue to remain available to them. I'm sorry I took a long time to answer this question, but it was a very important question for me coming from a very important stakeholder. So thanks for your patience.
Thank you very much for the detailed answer. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Felix Bergmans from Tree Drop. Please go ahead.
Hi, Gagan. First, congratulations on all the progress over the last 12 months. Now we hope it's going to be reflected in the stock price eventually. Just one of the questions on disbursement. So you're speaking about 18,000 crores for fiscal year 23, and then you mentioned the IF platform 15,000 crores. Does that mean that 15 out of the 18 will be done through this platform? That's my first question. And the other question is more like competitively, you know, why would a borrower in India go with you versus, other banks or other NBFCs today? If you could give us a little more details on why you believe your product is competitive in the market.
Yeah, so Felix, you are a very long-term supporter, and I would like to take this opportunity to thank you. You've been uniquely supportive to us in the sense that with all of your concerns around India, you've yet continued to have faith in India Bulls and the management team, and thanks for that. You've been involved in our business, and you've seen our growth trajectory in the past as well. Up until 2017, till the time that we got upgraded to AAA, we were niche players. On the asset side, we were a niche player focusing on specific segments in the retail mortgage market, be it self-employed lending around home loans or retail LAP loans and so on. And on the liability side, we were unique that we were the largest players in the mortgage securitization market in India. Come 2017, because of abundant liquidity, high credit ratings, etc., we perhaps made a colossal mistake of rapidly expanding the balance sheet. We are back to basically our basics, where we are focusing on specific segments. Fortunately, at this point in time, our scale, which is just a little over $100 million of disbursals a month, going to perhaps an average of $200 million of disbursals next year, and then subsequently $270 to $280 million in the year after. As we look to achieve these numbers, in the overall context, these are small numbers. We used to do roughly $500 million back in 2018. That is one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is that already at, you know, $120, $130 million a month, we are the third largest mortgage originator amongst HFCs. My goal is not to get capped at being the third largest mortgage originator amongst HFCs. I believe these niche segments allow us to partner with banks and actually become amongst the top five mortgage originators in the country between banks and NBFCs, especially because we are not constrained on the liability side. Within that, we will continue to focus on specific segments, which will thus do away with the disadvantage that we have on a relative basis on our cost of funds. There are a few of our peers who do lending at 12 to 13%, whose cost of funds are 9%, and they've built very, very good businesses. We believe those businesses need scale. We already have scale. We also have certain segments which we understand within urban India very well and have a track record of having gone through three cycles and thus know exactly what type of a business tends to swim naked when the tide is high. So we stay away from those credits. Those credits have performed exceedingly well. As long as we don't lose our head and try and again go very mass and try and compete at, you know, what is the 6.5% to 7.5% market right now, that's not the market for us. In the first place, in 2017, we should not have gone to that market. We will never go to that market. Currently, we cater to a market which is 8% to 9%. If you look at our slide, which is slide number five, you know, we are doing average ticket size of 28 lakhs, which is 2.8 million, where 2.3 million is the average ticket size for our home loan and 6 million is the average ticket size for our LAP loan. But look at the credit bureau score, which is the CIBIL score. We are doing loans which are 750 and above. So these are good quality loans, good quality profiles. But the credit appraisal is a little bit more tedious than appraising an employee working for a AAA or a AA rated company. These would require a whole lot more of due diligence, for which we have to continue to invest in a technology platform such that a large part of that diligence is done more through technology and less through human intervention. And we can provide the last 10 to 15% of subjectivity through the institutional memory that we have built for appraising these credits more efficiently. So that's the segment that we would go behind. Again, on the higher yielding low ticket segment, we wanted to tread on that product extremely cautiously. Once we make up our mind, then we will scale up that product. Most of our peers in that segment do around $40 to $50 million a month, which I believe we will start doing in 6 to 7 months from now, that kind of scale. So in order to not rush into that product, we took 2.5 years to test the product, built a book, saw it went, how it went through COVID and everything else that the macroeconomy has gone through. And now we are confident that we have the right product with the right cities and so on, and the right cost structure where, you know, for doing a 10 million rupee monthly disbursal, we don't spend more than 300,000 rupees. We took 2.5 years to get that model right, and that's the other segment that we would be going behind. With all of this, within the niche, we are very, very competitive. And as I mentioned, our cost of funds, despite the rate cycle, is only headed down. Our credit rating agencies are appreciative of that model. We continue to engage. We continue to focus on bolstering our capital further. And I'm sure that would continue to keep us on a positive rating trajectory, which will continue to bring down our cost of funds. But even if those cost of funds are to go down to a level where we can afford to do mass lending, let me clarify again, much like we are not pursuing balance sheet growth, absolute mass lending is not for us, and we're not going to pursue that.
That's very helpful, Gagan. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Amit Mahendale from Robo Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. Am I audible?
Yes, sir, you're audible.
Okay, great. So I have a couple of questions. First question is on the disbursement. I'm referring to slide 4, where we're looking to disburse about 15,000 crores from the AIF. So this is essentially the current wholesale book moving from NBFC to AIF, right, and not a fresh disbursal. Is my understanding correct here?
No, sir. I'm sorry. Your understanding is not correct. As I've clarified a few times in my comments, that the runoff of the wholesale book would largely be dependent on self-liquidation, which is being facilitated by the robust sales and thereby the collections that are happening, despite money is being put back into construction. And I was just commenting to my board members earlier today that if we look around our office and see around a radius of 5 kilometers around our office in Lower Parel in Mumbai, a lot of the buildings that we had that are mortgaged to us, which were 30-40% complete, today are at a stage where either they have received the occupancy certificate or are in the process of receiving it over the next 3 to 4 months. As that happens, the collections in the escrow accounts continue to remain very robust, and our primary go-to for reduction of the wholesale book would be self-liquidation. That is a far more cost-efficient model. The robustness of that model is also evident in the fact, through the other data that I shared with you, that all the structured deals that we did 1 year ago have already within 1 year run down by as much as 45%. Right, so there is no loan which is contracted for 2 years in the project finance market. So the 45% rundown is obviously a rundown which is much, much ahead of schedule.
Right.
The AIF platform is largely for incremental lending. There could be a 20 to 30% contribution from our book, but no more than that, 70 to 80%. So at least 10 to 11,000 crores out of the 15,000 crores that we are talking about would be us going back to the market, booking new loans, and restarting that line of income for ourselves, which was a very profitable line of income. Despite the near double-digit delinquency that the wholesale book now sits on because it has run down, etc., if we look back in time and see the last 15 years that we have been doing this product, it has been a steady 5% annualized ROA asset class for us. So the asset class has done well, despite the fact that in the first half of the 15 years, commercial assets were down. In the second half, which is the last 8 years, residential assets have been down. Despite that, the asset class has delivered to us 5% ROA. So it's a very, very profitable asset class to lend to. We've made our mistakes. We've learned from our mistakes. There are other challenges as far as lending to real estate is concerned, which is largely reputational in nature, which again would get addressed with a global partner partnering with you and thereby there being nothing very hairy around the loans that one is giving out. So as a combination, the right thing to do is to do this via an AIF platform, especially if the underlying fund is an open-ended fund, which is the structure that we are trying to create. And just as a breakup, a large part of the 15,000 would go to pursue new business opportunities.
Right. Great. Thanks. And so that essentially means that, you know, the growth numbers for the AUM numbers next year will be quite significant, as in about 18,000 in retail and about 10,000 in AIF will be about 25,000 crores plus type of a number. And from where we are today, it will be quite a substantial growth.
It will be 15,000 because we continue to receive at least 1,000 crores back every month. And
right. With
the enhanced collections in the assets, wholesale assets on our balance sheet, that book would also continue to run down. So it would be a 15% growth number. We very carefully calculated that and thus arrived at that.
Great, thanks. I have a second question on the sourcing on the retail side. So we disbursed about 2,800 crores this quarter. Could you share, what are the sourcing channels that we are using? Like some ballpark numbers on, you know, how much comes from branches, DSA, digital, any indicative numbers will be greatly appreciated.
So customers who opt for a large part of the journey to be digital would be around 40-45%. If you ask me strictly digital origination, where somebody would go to a online broker and from there would come to us, that's not how real estate purchases happen in India. That's not how we believe they will ever happen in India. So physical presence both of the office as well as at the construction site, as well as a network with the brokers for resale transactions. We are currently more focused on resale. We are not so focused on under construction, or we are focusing on projects which are close to occupancy certificate and are at more an inventory stage rather than an early stage of construction. So here it's a combination mostly of around 30% of the business coming from brokers / DSAs, and the balance 70% coming from our physical presence. But of this 100, around 40-45% of the people are today willing to do a large part of the journey digitally, where they don't have to necessarily call our executive to upload their Aadhaar document or their income statement or their P&L statement or whatever. They are happy to upload it by themselves. We are also able to today be in a position where we don't need a lot of this documentation from the customer, and we can get it from the source itself. So the tax-related information, the GST-related information, a lot of the property-related details, we are able to get it from the source itself. So I would say about half of the processing happens digitally, 70% of the sourcing happens by our people, and 30% through the channel.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Hemant from Pegasus Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah. First of all, congratulations on great set of achievements that have been mentioned on the call. I wanted to check the status of the PIL and whether the affidavits of two or three agencies that were pending have been submitted to the court.
So the folks behind the PIL will continue to harass us. The good news is that the key agencies which were supposed to file affidavits or complete their inspections have all done so. And MCA has filed the affidavit. The NHB inspection, the special audit, also got over, and we filed a disclosure around that with the stock exchanges, and it is on our website as well. NHB and RBI worked together on that. So the financial direct regulator, the wider group regulator, those are the three key stakeholders. They're all done with their process. Unfortunately, because of COVID, the PIL listing has not really happened. As and when it happens, this is a judgment passed by the Supreme Court I believe the matter, they've already classified it as infructuous, so the Delhi High Court should also follow suit. That said, those people will continue to irritate us since we went hammer and tongs behind them, classified them as blackmailers, proved to the world that they are actual professional blackmailers, got the police to investigate and subsequently arrest them, and some of them spent quite a long period of time in jail, and now the charge sheets have been filed and they are facing trial. So they continue to harass us, some FIR here, some complaint there, getting some other investigative agency to look into that, etc. To that end, the Mumbai High Court division bench in April of 21 passed a very, very strong order which said that all of these efforts are malicious and are being done to taint the company. That said, you know, we are in business and these kind of things will happen. Whichever regulatory agency or court or whoever asks us, we continue to cooperate. I am least worried now about these allegations, especially given the fact that the company has gone through a very, very detailed scrub at the regulator level. We have a concurrent auditor which has been appointed by our bankers, who has been in place since October 2019. I believe the concurrent auditor has gone through, as we speak, roughly 98% of the portfolio and has been observing every rupee in and out of the company since October 2019. So anybody who tomorrow gets up and alleges that there is siphoning done by the company, it is the duty of the relevant agency to look into that. But as far as we are concerned, we know it's the same thing, it's the same wine in a different bottle, and how to swallow it and grapple with it, we know quite well. It's almost like par for the course. The courts have been extremely supportive, and if there is anybody else who decides to trouble us, we will seek the necessary legal remedy. We will go to the necessary court. We have a very, very strong order, and we can always go back to the court and say that despite your order, so and so is asking us questions, please clarify. We should get a favorable order. So I am at this stage on three counts. One, basis the scrubs. Two, basis the current governance framework that we have with the board oversight, and three, with the engagement that we've had with the wider judicial authorities and the kind of support that we have received there, we strongly believe that these are matters which businesses have to deal with in regular course of business. There is not even a 1% risk of any financial loss or liability to any individual or to the company coming out of any of these matters. This I want to state very, very matter of factly and put it on record once and for all.
Thank you.
Yeah. If there is any further question, we'll just take one more question and that should be the last question. If there is none, then we can end the call.
Thank you. We'll take the next question from the line of Vishwas Bhatt, individual investor. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. Please go ahead.
Mr. Bhatt, your line is in talk mode. Please go ahead with your question.
Yes, sir. My question is on PIL, which is, you commented on that.
Right, sir. So as I said, please don't worry. There is no liability which can we've done our homework. We've done a lot of hard work. Unfortunately, we work in a country where people don't appreciate growth. We suffered that. We took it on our chin. But the silver lining is that today our regulators, our bankers, the wider government agencies, they understand our business as well as we do. Our bankers have supported us. Our rating agencies have supported us. They've done their diligence and they continue to support us. There would be irritants in the form of these PILs or some inquiry or something or the other. I think every and any company in the country today has to go through this. This is part and parcel of an evolving democracy where our institutions are also becoming more mature. and we have to support as they evolve and they also help us evolve as a business and improve our business practices. A large part of the governance overall that we did was also keeping in mind that we have to draw a line between ownership and management so that, you know, whatever are these allegations which keep coming up from time to time of the past, they never come in the future, and which is why a professionally managed company run by a professional CEO, assisted by a professional managing director and a chief operating officer and a chief financial officer. These are all very high quality gatekeepers that we have, and be rest assured, everything is in good hands.
Thank you. Okay. So should we take the next question?
Yes, please. One last question, please. I actually have something at 6:45, so we have to end it before that.
Sure, sir. The next question is from the line of Pranav Tendulkar from Rare Enterprises. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thanks a lot for the opportunity and congratulations for the great transformation. Sir, when you say that AIF, your contribution will be 10%, that means out of the total capital or out of total planned disbursement of 15,000 crores, your contribution will be 1,500 crores?
Sorry, could you repeat that, please? Your line was a little muddled. Yeah,
so out of the AIF, on the AIF platform, out of, say, 15,000 crores disbursement, when you mean that your contribution is 10%, you will be disbursing something like 1,500 crores?
Or that
is correct. Understanding is different. Okay.
That is correct. And the ROA that we are computing, which is expected to be 5%, is based on our 1,500 crore contribution.
Right. Perfect, perfect. Sir, also congrats on offering the board seat to the new investors, and that's a great change. Thanks a lot, sir.
Thank you. So we are open to any and every such feedback. The other important thing is that, you know, the big picture is that the company has transformed from trying to design a transformational model to something which is actual. The ROA of 3% is actual. These disbursals are actual. The demand from our partners is actual. So on this basis, I would just like to reemphasize that we are fairly confident that we should be back on a growth track from fiscal 23. Thank you again for the patience as we did a fairly painful transformation. But that painful transformation has many a silver lining, including the fact that today our gearing is all off between 2.5 to 3 times, and that's where we long-term want to be, which makes us very, very stable. And as I said, you know, there have been some great supportive stakeholders, shareholders, credit rating agencies, bankers, etc. And I can't thank them enough, because I know it is very painful to support a financial institution which is degrowing. I hope I don't continue to give you this pain for too long. And again, me and my team would like to record our thanks to all of you for your patience. Look forward to speaking to you at the end of the financial year. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Investec Capital Services, that concludes this conference call. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.